Hello and thanks once again for taking the time to download and listen to our podcast from CelticUnderground.net. I'm Harry Brady and this is podcast number 253. For those Celts living outside the greater Glasgow area, welcome to the podcast and the team of permanent winter, autumn and spring, but never the months of summer. Yes, it's the Celtic Underground podcast coming to you from the permanently crappy weathered Glasgow. As you'll hear, since the STV Grant podcast, I've become a bit bunged up because it's permanently pissing down here. But anyway, the season started. We are through to the umpty-dumpty qualifying round against somebody from Timbuktu following a victory in Iceland tonight. We'll shortly be having some more interesting guests in the podcast. Before that, we're going to have the Celtic Underground Top 10 for season 2014-15. Better get that out of the way before 2015-16 starts. But before all of that, our guest this week from St Anthony is a player who'd had a reasonable career at other Scottish clubs, but certainly when he signed for the Celts, many were not overly excited by his arrival. And I think St Anthony himself has admitted that he had to apologise to the guest when he met him for his lack of enthusiasm when he signed. A guy who was credited with being one of the reasons why we ended up winning in the centenary season, went on to become number two to the late great Tommy Burns. It is, of course, Mr. Billy Stark, one of the gentlemen of Scottish football. So rather than bore you any longer with my bunged up voice, it is him, St Anthony, with him, Mr. Billy Stark.
I'm delighted to be joined by Billy Stark, who's with me at the moment. And as always, Billy, on the website, what we always ask is, what was the first football game you were taken to and who was your first football hero?
Well, the first game that I was taken to, I remember very vividly. It was at Fir Hill. It was Partick Thistle against Kilmarnock. And in those days, Thistle had the big red and white
bands.
Red and yellow bands, and Kilmarnock had the blue, thick blue and white stripes. Mm-hmm. And it was just a big thing. I was only a wee boy, you know. I think my dad sort of wanted to take me to a neutral sort of game, because it was in common with a lot of West of Scotland families, it sort of split among those Catholic. My dad was Protestant kind of thing, and so his leaning was towards Rangers, but he wanted me to go and see a neutral game. So I remember that splash of colour, and so from there, there wasn't a particular favourite in those teams. I think it was my favourite Celtic player was Bobby Lennox from a very early age, and on the other side it was Jim Baxter.
Early to mid 60s.
And Wee Lemmy was always my favourite player, and the thing that really was fantastic was whenever I got to meet him, and over the years got to know him well, a better guy I've never met in football. Bobby's absolutely fantastic. Always get him the same way, likes a wee cracky a joke, and so humble for what he's achieved, you know. So he was my favourite player as a young boy.
So you first came to prominence with St Mirren. So how did you end up at St Mirren?
It's not a long story. Probably everybody's first club's got something behind it, but there's a wee guy called Baldy Lindsay who, it turned out, was Joe Miller's uncle. And Baldy was a scout for St Mirren. It was 1975. Alec Ferguson had taken over at St Mirren about 6 months previously, and they just stayed in the old the first and second division, as it was then, big divisions. And they got into sixth place in the second division, which got them into the new first division. So anyway, I was playing with Aries Land Waverley, secondary juvenile, and I was training with a few clubs. I was training with Rangers, training with Dumbarton, and wee Baldy Lindsay was on my case for some reason he really really liked me as a player, and he was on Fergie's case, sort of pushing me. So eventually he was turning up at my door and all the rest of it. Great wee guy, and eventually we played them in a friendly at St Mirren at Love Street, and I think I did okay for Isle of Waverly, this is. And then I get invited to go down to their first pre-season game, which was down in Selkirk, and I had a poor first half, as I remember it, and I'd proved to sort of average in the second half, and Ali Ferguson signed me in the bus on the way home, so he must have saw something there. And that was it. I was 18.
It's worthwhile asking at this point, what would Fergie been like in his young days? Because obviously you saw him at his inception when he was starting it, so...
Absolutely, I saw him in his embryonic stage, where he had been at East Stirling, I think, maybe 6 months, so he was barely a year, a manager, and... fiery, volatile. I mean, I think I then went to Aberdeen, obviously later on, and saw him again. But in the early days of St Mirren, it was just ready to take on the world. You know, everybody.
He's so much energy in his day, doesn't he? I mean, he was bursting.
I mean, that's what sets him apart. Apart from his ability, the drive and energy that he has is unparalleled. To be honest with you, he was always on the go, just so wrapped up in the game that I don't remember a game where he was absolutely, you know, delighted with everything. There was always something that he was critical of, perfectionist, and that stood me in good stead as an individual.
So within a wee while, that St Mirren team, it was beginning to blossom, a lot of young boys in it. Probably the most prominent would have been maybe Frank McGarvey, Tony Fitzpatrick, who get big transfers down south, but there was other guys as well. Obviously yourself, but there was a guy called Bobby Reid that was a centre half. Now, if fate had been different, he might have been another Alan Hansen.
It was. Well, it's funny you should say that, because as I'm led to believe, Bobby was a great centre half, Bobby, and did his cruciate ligaments in his knee in a sort of Scotland select game up in the Highlands, and never really recovered from it. Bobby used to score 8 to 10 goals a season from centre half, just in set pieces, quick. And the word was that Liverpool had him lined up, and then he got the injury and they signed Alan Hansen. So he was going to be a real top player. But McGarvey and Fitzpatrick and myself, Lex Richardson,
Abercrombie,
there was a young group of players there that were hungry to do well.
Good players as well.
We were a good side. And my first season there, we finished sixth in the new first division, and then in the second season we won the league.
Well, the season you won the league is worthwhile pointing out, because there's a guy I know who I used to work beside, who's a Clyde Bank fan, and he reminisces Clyde Bank had a great team at the time. Now, for the people who are maybe listening, this was the second tier of Scottish football. This isn't the top league.
That's right.
Now, there's likes of you and Fitzpatrick and McGarvey at St Mirren, Davy Cooper's at Clyde Bank, and Gordon Shrankin's at Dundee.
That's right.
Now, it's really, without being
disrespectful to nowadays,
Hartley at that time has to be seen to be believed.
Absolutely, I mean, Tommy Gemmell was it was Davy White. Tommy Gemmell, I think, took over after Davy White at Dundee. But as you say, Gordon Strachan was there. There's a lot of good players.
And then underneath that again, you've got Morton, Randy Ritchie, and Mark McGee.
Right,
so I mean, every team at that time had two or three players who were standouts.
Absolutely, and obviously then went on to
bigger things.
Yeah. But no, we had a great rivalry with Clyde Bank, as you say, Davy Cooper, Mike Larnock, Jim Fallon.
There was a game I always remember. Apparently, it's the last game to be played Christmas Day. 1976.
It was 1976 Christmas Day at Kilbowie. 10,000 sellout. Crowd trouble. It had everything. Finished 2-2, as it happens. And that season, we went up as champions, and Clyde Bank came up with us. And then we managed to stay in the Premier League the next season, and Clyde Bank went back down again. But I think Cooper went to Rangers at that point.
I killed Clyde Bank a wee bit, because he was their main attraction.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you're in the Premier League at this point with Alex Ferguson's young St Mirren team, and the first time you came to prominence in terms of Celtic, what was the first league game of the season. Around about October, Celtic played someone at Parkhead. Now I remember that for a couple of reasons. Firstly, is you know how in those days there wasn't even a great away support went to Celtic Park, because it wasn't an intimidating place. There wasn't any segregation.
That's right.
A lot of guys didn't want to take their kids if there was going to be trouble. And there was maybe like 4,000 or 5,000 St Mirren fans in the Rangers end that day.
Aye.
Good nature, so dead loud,
aye.
Dead confident as well.
Aye.
And on the Friday night, Celtic signed Frank Munro for Wolverhampton.
Right.
So the two things that are memorable about that game is, and it's a shame for you actually, because you scored a brilliant goal that day,
right.
An outstanding goal, but it tends to get overlooked because Munro scored the winner for St Mirren with an own goal in his debut.
That's right. I remember it well. Obviously, it was my first Premier League goal. which was sort of disappointing me, because I was always one that looked to get double figures in a season. So, you know, as you say, I think it was early October that we went to Celtic Park and I still hadn't scored. So that was my first Premier League goal. And in a funny sort of way to really jump on, I scored my 100th Premier League goal in that same goal for Celtic against Hearts.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Aye.
So,
who's the score that day?
The 4-2
one?
4-2 it was, 4-2, aye. Yeah. Aye, it was 4-2, that's right. So the first goal to score against Celtic at Celtic Park, as you say,
it wasn't just a goal. It's worth it.
Aye.
You beat a couple of men at the edge of the area. You done a wee feint, and then you just curled it in the goalie. It was one of these shots. It wasn't. You didn't have to be strong, but you did enough just to
accurate.
Curl it and right into the corner, and it was a fantastic goal. Stunned mind the goal. I think it was fantastic.
You weren't at that time, no. No,
it was a great goal.
For me, it was as a young lad. I would have been 19 at that point, and to score the winner at Celtic Park was quite amazing. I think it was the winner. I think Frank.
Oh, definitely.
I think Frank Munro scored the own goal first.
Yeah, Celtic equalised, then you get the winner.
That's right. And the other thing about that is, I remember it clearly. Tommy played left back that day.
Celtic played in green socks, which
so
never.
It did, no.
It didn't look right.
No.
You know,
so whenever we played, because we wore the black white stripes, black and white socks. I remember Celtic wearing green socks a couple of times.
As you say, Tam was left back, which wasn't a great decision either, to be honest.
It wasn't his defensive work, wasn't his. His best, aye.
So at the end of that season, St Mirren have done really well. They've consolidated themselves in the SPL, so it must have been a big disappointment when Fergie left.
Well, it was, aye. Although I can still remember that. That season was tough because we had just come up. He added some good experienced players that made all the difference.
Ian Munro was a good player.
Ian Munro and Jackie Copeland.
Mm-hmm.
And they three, with all the young boys, really made the difference. And we ended up, we played Ayr United, I think, round about March. And we beat them 1-0. McGarvey scored in the last minute.
Mm-hmm.
And that sort of distances, if they'd beat us that day,
mm-hmm.
we would have been fighting. They ended up being down, aye. A good side too, you know, mm-hmm. as I've shown over the years, with Ali McLeod and all the rest of it.
Mm-hmm.
So that was great to stay in the Premier League. And then we had the bombshell of Ali Ferguson leaving the club. And you're still young at that time, and I don't think the impact really sort of has a big impact, but you tend to just go on. As young boys, you tend to go on. I think when you become more experienced, you get more of a feeling for a manager and what he goes through and all the rest of it. So he was gone.
Arguably, Jim Clooney did better than Ferguson in terms of league finishes and cup runs and stuff.
Yeah, but I think that looks the way it is, and of course the facts would back that up. But I think you've got to say, I mean, what Alex Ferguson did from a team that were struggling in second division, built that momentum.
He did the groundwork, didn't he?
And Jim Clooney was a smashing guy, and I think Ricky McFarlane had been with Alex Ferguson as a physio trainer, and he became assistant to Jim, and that was a big factor, that continuity was kept there. But Jim didn't change that much, which is good management.
Well, he made a couple of good signings. Duke Summer was fantastic.
Great signings. Frank McDougall
was good, and I think Peter Weir broke through at that time
as well.
So, Billy Thompson.
That's right.
I mean, there was something like maybe 4 or 5 internationals in the book at that point.
There was, aye. It was good, as I say, it was a good side, and we had some memorable games with Celtic. I mean, if you look back at the record books, we would go up the park, miss a chance. Celtic would go up and score just a bit of quality. Mm-hmm. It was a 5-2.
Well, do you remember?
It was a 7-0 at Celtic Park, I remember.
Do you remember the cup tie?
Aye.
The, the, the Scottish Cup one. Celtic were actually lucky because we Murdo scored about a minute ago, and he got us out of jail.
We do what scored for us.
And I always remember this to the point of view. There was 27,000 Love Street that night. And we missed the first goal. And it was actually, looking back now as a wee boy, maybe been about 14 at the time, that was quite scary. Because you know the mass of people, you know, the passage, there was no passages.
Well, that's right. The game got held up.
The game got held up, and again there was crowd trouble and all the rest of the stuff. As you say, they had everything. And Celtic 2-10 men, and Johnny Doyle, that was his finest hour, as far as I'm concerned.
I think it was.
He scored twice that night, and he put us right out of home.
He did. I think there was a couple of penalties in that game as well, one for each side.
That's right.
But just as I said, I mean, we had some great battles with Celtic. I mean, we had 3 each at Love Street as well. It's sort of a Premier League game, but there were some games that were attacking games. But Celtic's quality in the final third, we Murdo scored a couple of great hits outside the box, but McCluskey and later Nicholas and McGarvey and all the rest of it was real quality we were up against there. And as I say, we held our own. We had, you say, when Dougie Somlin then came, we got third in the Premier League.
Scottish Cup
won
as well, which was an achievement for a Scottish team.
I'm as proud of that as anything, because we beat some great teams on the way. English first top division teams, Bristol City, Bolton Wanderers with Frank Worthington and Wally Morgan and George Best with Fulham. So that was a magnificent competition for us.
A
great tournament. No, so great for Celtic and Rangers. I remember they had some poor results.
Burnley and Rangers got beat by Chesterfield.
That's right.
In fact, Rangers got annihilated by Chesterfield, which was quite embarrassing.
Surprising, I know, exactly.
So the rest time, McGarvey gets his move to Liverpool and ends up at Celtic. Fitzpatrick is down to Bristol. You know, players are moving. Ian Monroe is down to Stoke. Did you ever get a chance yourself of going somewhere at that point when you're maybe at your peak at Tottenham?
No, I think I don't recall pushing for a move. I get married 79, started with a family, and I really enjoyed my football at St Mirren. Mm-hmm. With a good side, as I say, so I was never one to sort of push.
Rangers were say, I remember big newspaper headlines at the time saying Rangers were FT'd. Were you aware of that?
Well, no, that happened when I signed for Aberdeen. Mm-hmm. Because that was 1983. It was freedom of contract just came in. Mm-hmm. So in other words, up until 1983, if a club offered you the same wages that you were on, you weren't going anywhere. But then with that, you were able to move and it could go to a tribunal. So
I gave the players the power.
Yeah, so at that point, I sort of felt I'd been at St Mirren, I think 8 years. Mm-hmm. I felt the time was right. I'd made up my mind I was wanting to move.
So there can't be too many players that Fergie's come back for twice.
No, there's no.
So that must be something you're proud of.
You can make the same mistake twice. But I remember that at that time Rangers and Dundee United were wanting to sign us as well. Mm-hmm. And but Alex Ferguson, because I remember getting a phone call from him. I had agreed to sign for him, and he was doing it at the English PFA do, and I got a phone call this night, and he was raging. Somebody had told him I'd signed for Rangers. And I thought that was just the usual sort of rumour mill. So he was able to sort of settle down when I told him no, I'm going to Aberdeen, because it wasn't that hard a decision. They had just won the Cup Winners Cup and had won the league.
So tell me this then, they'd won the Cup Winners Cup and you came in at that point. Did you play in the Super Cup finals against Hamburg?
No, I was on the bench because I'd been injured the whole season.
But you got a medal then?
I got a medal.
That's something as well. That's even what you played to be part of the squad. Yeah. I mean,
Hamburg were obviously European Cup winners. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that first season we played Porto in the Cup Winners' Cup semi-final as well. And they were a right good side. They won the European Cup a couple of years later, but they beat us at 1-0 at Pittodrie.
I've got a theory, and my theory is Aberdeen would have won the league in 83, in my opinion, if they didn't have Gothenburg hanging on. Because with the European final coming up, I saw it happen with Celtic in 2003 as well, when they played Porto. If Aberdeen had won the league that season, they'd have been in the European Cup, and that was the season that Dundee United got to the semis.
So was Roma.
Now, with the greatest respect of Dundee United, Aberdeen were a buckle in Rome.
Aye.
Nobby Ferguson in charge.
I think you're
and
right.
I think that there's every chance that they'd have got the final that.
Aye. No, that's a fair point. It's a fair point. But no, I mean, I think from my point of view, to go to Aberdeen was a no-brainer. Their whole squad was intact. Mm-hmm. And just what you're talking about there, how detailed Fergie was, they lost, he thought they lost out that that season. I can't remember what it was. It was a point behind or whatever Dundee United, and he felt he didn't get enough goals from the middle of the park, so that's why he signed me. So that was just sort of getting into that squad, which was quite daunting because they'd won the European Cup, Winners' Cup, the Scottish Cup, and all the rest of it. And you know, I don't remember thinking about how am I going to get a game. I just had the ambition to go and give it a go. And obviously Gordon Strachan went the year after I went there, and that created an opportunity in the right hand side to go in and sort of stake a place permanently.
So 84 League and Cup double, 85 the league, 86 Scottish Cup and League Cup.
Yeah,
so they'd have been great years.
Fantastic. I mean, you know, you tend to, whether you like it or not, people say you enjoy it and don't take it for granted and all the rest of it. And you know, even the best days will still have an element of that you just think it's going to continue forever, you know, because you're being successful. But when you look back now, for Aberdeen at that time, it was just a combination of things. The main one being that Alex Ferguson was in charge of Aberdeen, and he inherited a good squad of players, and he bought the right players to take it a stage further and brought through the young ones as well. So you know, that was something that worked out for me, because I wanted to go and win medals. Major medals, and to Berlin. So,
Bill, Fergie moves on in 86, and Ian Porterfield moved in, and you're getting to, a certain age, and maybe Porterfield wanted his own men in, so you were made available for transfers. Now, I've got an apology to make here, because I feel as if I'm due to make an apology. It was the summer of 1987, and I was only 21. There was me and a few guys used to go to the Celtic games, and during the summer you get fed up, so you go to the pub for a pint. And I went in for the pub one day, and my mate said, "Have you seen the paper?" And I went, "No." He said, "See, we Celtic." I said, "Oh, who is it?" Dead excited. Billy Starr. "Oh, no." And he said, "I'm outside." I said, "The Rangers are signing guys, like Richard Goff and all that."
"I know.
You're signing Billy Starr. Wait, is he?" He said, "Maybe 31. I can't remember.
30.
And there was just that perception that maybe you'd seen better days. And I remember being dead pessimistic, and I always remember my dad. When I went back to the house that day, and I said to my dad, "See, Celtic signing me now, Big Starr." And I went, "What do you think?" He says, "There's only one mistake we've made there." And I says, "What sign was like? We should have had him 5 years ago." He says, "That boy's a great player." So it goes to show how a wee bit of
seniority. Knows what
he's talking about. he knew you'd score, but it became obvious that when you started playing that you were still a class player. Right. And the thing that I always remember for the earliest moment was watching you play is Chris Morris's forte for right back was getting to the byline.
That's right.
And you gave him so much space in that right hand side, with making runs and taking guys away. And in the early days of the season, that was a joy to watch.
We played well in that early part of the season, notwithstanding my first game at Celtic Park for Celtic, which was Arsenal.
Oh, aye, 5-1.
it was a lot of players. I mean, to talk about why that came about, I was so lucky that well, Davey had gone and Big Billy had been going as manager. Murdo, Alan McAnally,
Brian McLare
and Mo Johnston all had left. So Big Billy comes in and he's got four players to replace. Now, you can't bring in everybody at 21, 22 years of age is maybe going to have a sale on or whatever.
No.
So obviously he knew me, and he was kind enough to say later on he wished he'd signed us earlier on. But Mick McCarthy had just, was Davey's last signing, I think. So he was in place, and then Chris Morris, Andy Walker and myself sort of came in, and then later on, I think it was maybe September, October, wee Joe came, and then Macca came, and that sort of put that team together. So yeah, I was very lucky that circumstances worked for me. To go into Celtic in the centenary year was something I'll always be, you know, amazed and grateful for.
And then we can't mention you playing for Celtic without mentioning that first Old Firm game, because you were involved in two incidents everybody recalls. The first one's a goal. The goal was a great goal, and you took it really well, and if there's anything that's going to get you on side with supporters, it's scoring the one in Old Firm game. But there was also the one you lost your boot, and you went to pass the ball bootless, and soon as came in and showing his studs obviously and all this. What's your record?
Well, Granny was involved in both of those incidents, because I remember the goal well.
Oh, yeah.
We'd sort of worked on pressing the ball, and I think Jimmy Nicol was right back, and Tam put him under severe pressure. He gave the ball away. Mark McGee got up the left hand side and he played that across, and Granny, for some reason, ended up on the edge of the penalty box, which see, he got a nosebleed when he ended up there. So he dummied it, and I think that's because he didn't want to make a mess of it, having a shot, and I just came in behind him and was able to curl it into the far corner with my left foot. So at that point, I think it was only 5 minutes gone.
Well, it was early.
Aye. And so at that time, you're not thinking for a minute that's going to be the only goal of the game and the winner of the game. But as it happens, that's the way it turned out. Although we missed some chances and played
well,
really
I was just about to say that. Wasn't just the fight we beat them? We had them a good do that day. It could have been 2 or 3 nothing. But there's one that always sticks in my mind. Wee McCall had just signed for Rangers. Wee McCall.
That's right.
And he tried to header a ball away for a corner, that's and right. He hit the bar with it. And right. Another centimetre down below, it's in the top corner.
Was it been someone
and
goal?
You can see his face in the telly, just to say. No, he was.
How did they get away with that?
No,
I think he just lost.
Yeah, he just lost his
just
bearings completely.
Game,
you know, and you can tell he was fucking calling the phrase out of mess. He didn't have a clue
what
he was doing.
Aye, just lost his bearings altogether. But no, you're right. I mean, I think that day we played really well, and that I think was an important game. I remember Big Billy saying that it said in a marker that, you know, everybody was expecting Rangers to win the league for the first time the year before, and then signing these internationals, Butcher and Roberts and all them, that it was going to be a cakewalk for them because we were in turmoil. But that gave us a lot of confidence, and we put together a decent run before I think we lost at Dunfermline, and then after the Dunfermline game we put together a really long run, about 30 games or something like that. So it's funny, I mean, that season's still
fresh,
lucid and fresh in my mind.
There's two goals that I'd like to bring up, a bit that I don't recall, yeah. that were typical, I would call, well, not typical Billy Stamp goals, maybe the two best goals. There was one that was a replay Easter Road. The first game wasn't a great game, and it was it finished right. Nothing each, and it went to the Easter Road, and it may have been, could it have been extra time?
It was just late in the game.
So Grant hit a shot, Gorham's in goals, it's hit the bar and bounced up.
Right.
And by the time Gorham can get to his feet, you'd pounced. And it sounds an easy thing to say, oh, you just headed into the net, but the ball was the ball bounced high in air. And when you saw your leap, it was a perfect leap, and you managed to get above it and header it downwards. And the game, I never appreciated just what a good goal it was till I saw it on television.
Aye.
Another thing as well is there was three Celtic players behind you. You know what I mean? There wasn't Hibs defender in sight. See, if you hadn't got it, McAvaney, or I think it was Joe Miller, and somebody else was busting in at the back here, because when you scored, I jumped and told you.
That's right. I don't know why that was. I don't know why it was, because when we knew Granny was shooting, normally we'd have ran back to for them to take the goal kick. But Granny was a great guy and did a really good job. But it was a great strike. I mean, I don't think he's hit a ball more sweetly than that. Although I'm saying that, I think
he scored one that season.
He scored one at Easter Road, which was a belter later on that season.
In April.
It was a volley.
And a game
goal
as a goalkeeper.
But no, you're right. I mean, I used to, when I was a young lad, I played as a striker, and so I was always scoring goals and expected to score goals. So, you know, when somebody was having a shot, my old man always told me to fall it in, get something off the goalkeeper or whatever, as you say. It did bounce high. And when I saw it myself later on, I did manage to get up, but it still went in quite high, you know.
It was a great
win for us to go Easter Road, because it was a sellout crowd. And
that was some night. Again, it was one of the grounds. It was jam packed.
It was.
So it was. And another goal as well is, I think it was a following season. We were 2-0 down at Pittodrie in early November.
Aye.
And you go back into the game, and then you get a ball about 25 yards out, and you just rattled it right in the top. What a goal that was!
That wasn't like me. That wasn't my distance normally, but I can remember that one well as well. As you say, we're 2-0 down.
And that must have been a bit sweeter as well, because it was your old club, and
aye, for sure. I mean, you see some nowadays. You know, they give it all that, I don't want to celebrate and all the rest of it, but I don't think that was the case in those days. I don't think I went mad right enough, because I think Tam and a few others had jumped on me before I could have started to make a run anyway. But no, that was a good night for us to come back for 2-0 and get a draw.
Get a point, that was a good result. Taking back to the Rangers game there, they were sort of brushed over the soonest tackle. What was going through your mind at that point? At the time, were you a bit aggrieved at the nature of it?
No, I mean, is it
just a professional thing, like, you know?
I think one of the things, I mean, soonest, I remember doing a thing for Celtic TV. a couple of months ago, and it was a review, and it was picking your best team against the opponents you're playing against, and I put Souness in there, and I think a few of them weren't that happy, but Souness was a magnificent player. He was a nasty bit of work, you know, he really was. He was really
that
nasty.
That was part of his game.
Part of his game, but he was a superb player. And so what happened with the build up to that was I'd said Granty had been involved. He played a wee short pass to me. No, I played a wee pass to him, my boot came off, and he played it back to me, and I saw Souness coming, because I wasn't a young boy, I was experienced enough. I saw him coming. He'd been booked already, I think, and I just laid the ball off, and I got my weight off my foot, and he just came right through me. If I had my weight in my foot, it would be a badge, no doubt about it. But excuse me, I went down. Of course, Big Roy was right there, and it was a no-brainer. I think Big Davy Stein was the referee. It was a no-brainer. It's a sending off on its own. Never mind a second booking, you know. So I think he just as we spoke about earlier, we really bossed that game, and I think it was just frustration. But there's never any excuse
you
for that.
Spoke to him since to be
with him. Met him a couple of times, but never spoken to tackle. And to be fair, for Souness, you know, his career was littered with them, and played a lot of big games. So I wouldn't think that would be high up in his memory, you know. But it was good to come out of that one today. But I mean, you're right what you say. You know, the number of Celtic supporters that talks about that goal, then they remember the Souness sending off just as much. So
that's right.
All help to sort of get us a good start in my Celtic career.
Is there one particular memory you've got for the centenary season that you hold dear, or is it a collective?
I've got a memory which is no. Like a personal thing, like scoring a goal or anything like that. It was the cup final at Hampden, and Mark McGee, I remember Big Billy in the build up when he named the team, he says this is a 13 man job today, because obviously Mark McGee and I were disappointed not to be starting. But he brought us on, we're 1-0 down, he brought us on, I think maybe 25 minutes to go, and it was a lovely sunshine day, and Celtic support, I mean, it's almost like blinding, that green and white, you know, when the sun's out. And I'll never forget the roar. We won a corner, still 1-0 down, we won a corner, and the roar for the Celtic support, it just sent a shiver down your spine, you know, as if, you know, you find an extra gear, you find something extra, without a doubt, and that's the big thing that sticks out for me in that season, that they just weren't going to accept. And we had some players like that as well. They just weren't going to accept that we were going to lose that game, even though we went to the last couple of minutes still trailing. So that for me summed up the whole thing about that season, about the importance of it, which Big Billy always kept going on about. He knew the significance of it, and luckily for us, we managed to get the goals.
If there's one sad aspect about that, Celtic didn't build any strength in that centenary season. Now, that summer there was guys, I remember at the time thinking that John Collins and Kevin Gallagher would have been great signings for Celtic, if they just put the money out to get them. And by all accounts they were keen to come here. But anyway, we didn't build on it. But the one thing that the team had at the time, and we lost it very, very quickly, was the experience. We look at Big McCarthy and Big Roy at the back, and then you're into midfield, and you've got yourself and Tommy, and then up front you've got Mark McGee, Frank McAvaney. These are all highly experienced players, and within the space of about 6 months they were away. And I actually remember going to a game, I think it was Big Roy just left to go to Newcastle, and it was Paul McStay's first game as captain, and something just didn't seem right. You looked about and you're looking at, what do you respect, like guys like Mike Galloway and Tommy Coyne, people like that, who, and it was unfair to them, because they were just in the door. They needed a wee bit of
help.
There was nobody new to help them on their way, because Paul wasn't that type of boy. You know, he didn't have Big Roy's or McCarthy's, you know, that sergeant major type at the back that would make other people do things.
You're right, that's part of the chemistry of a team. You know, we had a lot of players that wanted to win and would do anything, just about anything within the rules to win. But you know, you had demonstrative ones like, as you say, Big Roy particularly, who drove you on. You know, in that cup final when we equalised with whatever it was, a minute to go, most people would have, or most teams would have settled for taking it in the injury time. Like, oh, it was, we're going for the winner, which luckily they got. So that was the kind of attitude that we had. And as you say, when you lose that, Tam was the same. Tam
took years to replace that. Sort of years.
Absolutely. So it was disappointing. But I remember at the time, I'm talking about being a young player early, and you don't take it. Then I was an experienced player then, and I remember, you know, just you could gauge Big Billy was disappointed that he wasn't given the funds to go and build on it, without a doubt, because it needed being rebuilt, but added to.
Big
Ian Andrews was the only signing we made. I think
the only reason they get him is Pat Bonner injured himself in the European Championships and was going to boot for months and months.
You strengthen when you're on top. That's the best way to do it.
After Celtic, you moved on to Kilmarnock. Now, at that time, would Tommy have been player manager at the time when he signed you?
No,
he was still in the playing
staff. Talk you through that. Tommy left in the sort of, I think it was in about December. I think we played Ajax at Celtic Park.
That was the last game.
So Tommy went to Kilmarnock mid-season. I had been injured that season, and I came back. I played the last two league games in the cup final. After that, then Jim Fleet was a manager at Kilmarnock, and they made an offer for me to go there. Big Billy offered me another year's contract, which was very, very difficult to turn down. But I was 33 at that time, and I knew I wanted to play as much as I can. Same with Tommy. And so I made the sort of Kilmarnock move, which Tommy was on the coaching staff there, but basically a player.
So now we're going to touch on Tommy, obviously, because you and him become like a double act at this point, right?
Aye.
But what I wanted to ask you first is, so you were a right-sided midfielder, and he was a left-sided midfielder.
Right.
So in terms of playing against each other through the years, you must have been in one another's faces a few times.
Absolutely. That's how it started. I mean, going back to, two seasons anyway in the Premier League, and I was playing against Tam. Until I went to Celtic, so we talked almost 10 years. He was such a great guy. Tommy is well documented, we all know that, but a fierce competitor. Absolutely fierce competitor. But within that, and I think you saw that even right on the management side as well, he still had the humility and the good grace at times to know when he'd been sort of outdone or whatever. He would do everything in his power. He would kick you, he would do anything that was required for Celtic to win the game. But, you know, it was a wee laugh in there at times. And that's how I started to sort of get to form a wee relationship, even though it was competitors. And then
there's a mutual respect for each other.
Mutual respect, first of all. Exactly.
Because you were different players. You were a tall guy, right? And unusually for tall guys, you're a lovely part. Touch
right.
In the middle of the park.
Yeah.
You only find it's a wee guys I've got a touch,
right. Right.
And you were good in the air as well.
Right.
Whereas Tommy wasn't like that. Tommy relied me on a wee burst of speed and
silky,
he was
left foot, and great balance, and see a pass.
That's right.
But the thing playing against them then was that because Celtic were, I'm talking about the games that we played with St Mirren, Celtic were so good, that front six, you know, McLeod, Burns, Davy Provan, McCluskey, Nicholas, McGarvey, that I think sometimes they left themselves a bit open defensively, so I would be in, my job was sort of box to box. So, you know, I'd be in there for a chance. Tam would be sitting out waiting for us to lose the ball, and then I'm chasing back to try and get back goal side him. So I think later on in his career he really improved that side of his game. I think because Celtic is such talented players, they knew that if we'd scored three they would score four. That's normally what happened, but I think the defensive side he improved on. But
tell me how the managerial thinking about them, because Tommy obviously got offered the player manager's role, that right? Like,
he did.
And did he approach you at that point to become his assistant, or is it something that just...
No, there was a wee sort of I wouldn't say agreement, because what happened was 85, I think, I started doing my coaching badges at Largs, mm-hmm. and Tommy was doing it at the same time. So we're in the same group, and we had the same ideas about how the game should be played and all the rest of it. And that's when it really started to form. Then a couple of years later, I signed for Celtic, and it was just that rapport was there. And we'd always thought if we get into management that we would like to give it a go working with each other. Mm-hmm. So through his word, when he got the manager's job at the end of that season, I'd gone to Hamilton because I'd picked up a lot of injuries in that year at Kilmarnock. I'd gone to Hamilton to get into the management side, assistant manager to Big Billy McLaren, and at the end of that season, Tommy wanted me to go down as assistant at Kilmarnock, so it was a no-brainer. Mm-hmm.
And what kind of partnership would you have had? Would Tommy have been the sort of like the guy who shouted a wee bit more, and you were the guy who maybe...
I think people always sort of look for that, the dynamics of a partnership, and I think when you become an assistant manager, the first thing, it's how you're brought up and the standards that you're taught. So when you're on the coaching staff, your job totally is to support the manager in whatever
in
way you can.
Every respect.
No sign of a chink. And of course, it's human beings. Sometimes you had a different view on something, but that was between me and Tommy. And when it came to the players, Tommy had the final say, obviously. And I was like, the players wouldn't have known that I had maybe no felt that was the right thing to do. Because that's...
You wouldn't be doing your job if you never spoke up.
Not at all.
Because you don't want to be a total yes man and just go along for
it. Not at all. Tommy wouldn't have allowed that anyway. So, but no, in terms of whether Tam had that red hair and that temper that goes along with it and all the rest of it, so there was times he lost that, but generally Tam was very measured and in the technical side of the game he was fantastic, and had clear views about how he wanted his teams to play, and particularly how Celtic were going to play.
Well, Kilmarnock had two seasons that were really dramatic. The first was when you got promotion, but I wouldn't say it was a skin in your teeth, but it was a close run thing.
It was a skin in your teeth,
but most importantly, I always remember when you get into the you were unlucky because you get into the SPL, and it was a 12 team league,
25%,
and then they decided that three of them would go down, 3 out of 12. So you're thinking, unless you finish, let me think, 9th, then you're getting relegated, and when you just get promoted, you're obviously the favourites to get back down again.
Exactly.
And it went to the last game.
It did. We beat Rangers the second last game at Rugby Park, 1-0. Tam Black scored with a free kick, and then Tam was injured that day.
Tam Burns?
Didn't they play, aye. I played. I was playing sweeper at that time. And then the following week we went to Easter Road, and I'd picked up a calf strain, and Tam was fit, so he played, and I was in the sideline, and we took a big crowd to Easter Road, and we needed a draw. St Johnstone were playing Motherwell, and Motherwell were finishing second in the league that year, I think. And so they were big favourites to win, but St Johnstone went to Fir Park and they won 1-0, so we were 0-0 at Easter Road. So if Hibs had scored, we were down. Because St Johnstone,
you don't get any tighter than that then, do you?
Well, I can tell you that was a long 90 minutes on the bench. No, I was in the bench. Tam came back and played the last game. It was a great feeling, that, to keep them in, just as you say, to go up. And we basically, because we got called Dad's Army, we had Tam, myself,
George McCluskey,
Toby, George McCluskey, of course,
Williamson,
Bobby Williamson, big Craig Patterson. So they called us Dad's Army. Now we went into the Premier League, we only had, I think, 60 grand to spend, and we bought Andy Millen from Hamilton.
He was a good signing.
And he was a great signing. We actually tried to bring him to Celtic, but Alec Totten was the manager at Kilmarnock at the time, and wouldn't allow it, because we had a whole squad to build at Celtic when we were in there, all, as you know.
Now, that summer of 94, Fergus got a wee bit fed up with McCarrie shenanigans, and he's looking for a manager. You know, at that time people were saying, oh, there was ridiculous ones getting bandied about, like Kenny Dalglish and things like that. Big name managers, but it was good to get Tommy and yourself on board, because number one, the fans knew who you were, you were young and ambitious, and it just seemed the right choice at the time.
Aye.
But looking back now, it was quite controversial, because Celtic got hammered by a fine.
Now,
I don't think there's any secrets were tapped up, right?
Aye.
Because it all came out in the wash after it. Now, every player that I've interviewed for these podcasts, and you say to them, how did you end up at Celtic? They were all tapped.
Aye.
So see this thing about, and to this day, I understand Celtic Celtic is the only team that's ever been done.
I know.
And that leaves a lot of bad feeling in part of the Celtic fans.
It's not as big a thing now because it happens. Mm-hmm. It was through agents.
It's accepted practice.
Practice because it was through agents. But in the old days, I think wee John Clark was famous for it, for getting on the blower. And everybody did it. Mm-hmm. Everybody did it. Of course you did. You knew if a club wanted you.
Apparently wee John's party piece, David Proven, telling me that his mammy says, if went up one night, there's somebody in the line for you, David. It's a man for the weekly news. And he answered the phone, it's not the weekly news, it's John Clark. So that's how it was done in the days, you know. Aye. Very discreetly. But the point I'm trying to make is, well, I'm still a wee bit aggrieved at that, because we get hammered. And you and Tommy, if Kilmarnock are a good club, and there was bad blood there for a wee while, and that wasn't right either, because you did a lot for Kilmarnock.
Especially Tommy, I mean, what he did for them, and we went down there pretty early on, and got bad treatment for a while.
That's only natural.
Which is fair enough, but I mean, I remember that well, because I was on holiday. Tam had been on holiday, and I was at Glasgow Airport, and I got a phone call. First thing to say is, I remember we were going down to sign an S form. I think it was Gary Hay, actually. At one of the schools in Kilmarnock, and that was when they came on the radio, Lou McCarry had been sacked. And there was a funny wee thing in my mind, I bet you'd thank Tam for that joke. And as Tam said, I mean, we were 37 when we went there, which was young. You can't turn that down.
No.
Because just to explain that bad feeling and all the rest of it, we had, to be fair, had signed a new contract at Kilmarnock, but we couldn't have turned in Celtic, no way. And Bob Fleeton didn't take that well at all. Very badly. And he sort of, I suppose, if you put yourself in that position, you would probably understand it a wee bit better.
I suppose he felt maybe a wee bit betrayed, but at the same time, he must have appreciated that especially with Tommy's Celtic background.
Exactly, you always hope so. Yeah. So anyway, I think there was a lot of sort of politics going on. He offered me the Kilmarnock manager's job. Tommy was going, but there's no way I was going to Tam. Mm-hmm. And we had to go through all that, going up to the Scottish League, getting through to Edinburgh. I can't even remember the technical terms for it.
To get evidence for us.
Aye, to stop. We had to go through to put in place something to stop them. I can't just remember.
An injunction or something, wasn't it?
But do you know that season we were playing the Scottish Cup final against Airdrie, and Tam and I went to a tribunal up in the Westernwood Hotel in the week of the Cup final. That's how long that went on for.
Really?
Aye.
Dear, dear.
Aye, because I sat beside.
And what was the outcome? Was Kilmarnock looking for money?
It was Lord McLean sat on it, because I sat with him at a game many years ago, and I can't even remember what it was about. I don't know if that was the financial thing finally getting sorted. I tend to think that wasn't the case, but I know for a fact that happened. That was the May of that next season, and we were still involved in it.
When you took over 94, one of the questions I would need to ask is, what was your first impressions in the squad? Because it was looking back, you know, it's pretty mediocre to be polite.
It wasn't a squad that you feel Celtic should have, and so we knew. But again, you didn't even think of that in terms of relating that to whether you took the job or not. We were going to Celtic, that was it. Just going to do our best, and the squad needed turned round. I mean, obviously, from the time when Tam left, and I left just after him, we still had Grantie, Packie, Paul,
John Collins.
John Collins came after we left. He may be signed the summer I left, actually.
As a player, you mean?
As a player.
Sorry, I thought you meant as a manager.
No, sorry, as a player.
Right.
That was the players that were left from that squad.
Not a lot.
But at least we knew them. Gary Gillespie had been a top player, but just injury prone, unfortunately, and wasn't able to.
So there was guys like Gillespie and Dovchik and Charlie Nicholas at that time who you could never doubt their ability, but they were constantly injured. It was quite sad, because, you know.
Well, Nicholas, that was my. Because what happened there, Packie and Charlie had been freed by McCarry at the end of that season.
And then they got another year.
He brought them back. So, and Nicholas was some player, you know. He just should have done so much more.
But at that point,
he had.
His knees had sort of given
trouble. Aye, he was at that age, aye.
He wasn't very mobile the way that he'd been when he was younger.
Absolutely,
you know,
so. Not. So, and Paddy obviously was a big thing for us to get him back with his experience and all the rest of it. So, but we had Matt McNally and Rudy Vata and Wally Faulkner and
Simon Dolan was breaking through.
Simon Dolan was breaking through, had just come through, mm-hmm. right?
Of course,
John Collins was there as well at that point.
Yeah. If you're looking, one thing, Ferguson took over, so there was a wee bit of financial input.
Yeah.
In the early stages, I'm sure I heard Tommy remark that it didn't come as quickly as he would have liked.
Yeah.
But, you know, Phil O'Donnell came in, Big Pierre came in.
That's right.
And, you know, within maybe the space of 9-10 months, there is a change in the dynamics, and it was always where we're going places.
Aye.
So did you feel that as well?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I think Pierre was a big one for us. Phil, we just felt that type of midfield player we were short of, and he was the best going about.
Is it true we paid cash for O'Donnell? Never heard this thing that he wanted.
I'm not exactly sure.
Because do you remember obviously you can confirm this, Alan McLaren was up for transfer and he desperately needed a centre half. The rumour at the time was that Celtic could afford to put a down payment for the two of them, but couldn't he afford to pay cash for O'Donnell and a down payment?
Well, no, my recollection of that is that we did consider McLaren, who was available at the time, but we wanted Phil O'Donnell, and Fergus was away on holiday, I think, when that deal went through. However it was structured or whatever, he wasn't happy with
Phil's
deal.
Aye.
However it was getting paid, I think you're right. I don't think we paid cash, but we paid more than you would normally pay as a first instalment or whatever, and Fergus wasn't happy with that, I remember that. But that was maybe our inexperience. We desperately wanted the player, and then when Pierre came, we went to Holland many times to watch, because you're making your first big signings.
Well, I did a podcast with Andy Ritchie recently.
Did you?
And he was a guy who was coming back and getting Tommy and you the report.
That's right, Andy did.
And he says that he remembers seeing Big Pierre and being absolutely gobsmacked. That there was every kind of goal. There was headers, goals, foot, side the box, tap-ins. He says that he wasn't, he was clearly, and he says he couldn't believe our luck, because none of the big Dutch clubs had stepped in.
That was the thing that made us hesitate a wee bit, because he was 24, 25, I think. And as you say, I mean, once he was on that right foot, I was hitting the target, and 9 out of 10, it was scoring. And so that was the thing I can remember, just because it's funny how all these things, you don't just look at a player and you look at other things around about it, and we wondered why, you know, some hadn't touched them. Because we got him for, I think, 1.1 million. Which turned out to be
a bargain.
A bargain, aye. So he was a big signing for us, and obviously he scored the important goal in the cup final later on that season.
And that gave you a bit of breathing space, didn't
it?
It gave us all a big lift.
Aye, because I mean, I think you know, that you feel a wee bit sort of disappointed because of the Raith Rovers cup final, we battered them. We battered them that game, and it's just
Soul
sometimes if something's no for you, it's no for you, and it was meant to be, because I mean, I'm sure Dale was offside for the equalising goal in the last minute, because Charlie had put us 2-1 up, and we thought we were home and dry.
It was a wee bit of naivety as well that we didn't hold on to that.
Probably,
you know,
probably.
A wee bit more experience with the sods.
Probably, you're probably right, aye. Because I remember extra time thinking, we're not looking as if we're going to win this game. No, that we're going to lose it. It looks as if it's going to go to penalties, and when it goes to penalties, anything can happen, you know. But I mean, Raith Rovers had Colin Cameron, Stevie Crawford, you know, future Scotland international.
Big Neary was still at the back, I think, was he?
Big David Neary played.
He's a great player.
Redford was in. Ian Redford was in that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we. I'm not Celtic should beat Raith Rovers 19 out of 10, but just the way it was, it was as if someone was stopping us doing it, because we played well enough in the game, you know. But that's forgotten about.
Was there any other players that you went for at that period that you didn't get, that you maybe look back on and think he could have made a difference?
No, the only one that I remember, because obviously we cadet in the can, you know, and Stubbs and people like that, and Stubbs is related to it. My recollection of it was in the 9-in-a-row season, Fergus, it's well talked about now in terms of the job he did, and nobody can deny that. And I think the reason he was able to do that was because he was almost detached from the football side.
He couldn't have been an easy man to work for. And I say that as a fan.
I know. He wasn't an easy man to work for. And obviously, Tommy had worked closely with him. I did my caretaking at the end of that season, which was a bit different. But he had his focus on what he was doing, building a new stadium. I don't think he was that. He certainly wasn't as concerned as we were about Rangers doing 9 in a row. He wasn't going to deviate for that, because that season, our last season, where Paul's ankle was really.
He ended up retiring, didn't he?
So that summer, I can remember we were going down to the Belfry for a wee few days training, around about the turn of the year, and. We were trying to sign Andy Townsend.
All right.
He was the Republic of Ireland captain at the time. I think he was 31. And I think it was about 650,000. And Fergus wouldn't give us the money because he was older. but he was a class act, Andy Townsend, and would have gave us, because Paul was struggling.
And there was such a narrow margin between Celtic and Rangers at that time. He might have been something that got his, definitely.
Because I remember Tam, I had to take the team down, he stayed behind, he was fighting with Fergus about trying to get it done, and he just wouldn't have it. But yet, he gave us £3.5 million to sign Alan Stubbs, because sometimes the timing of payments and all the rest of it came into it. But with Stubbsy, he was 24, he was going to have a sell on and all the rest of it, so he was quite happy to invest in that. But he wouldn't invest in a sort of dead transfer, if you like, where Andy Townsend plays for a couple of years and nothing. So that's one that I remember that we were desperate to get and we couldn't.
And the foreign players were making a big difference, because the excitement about the place, you know, Cadet and Decanio. I've never seen in my whole life a guy make a difference in one game than Decanio did. Remember, he came on as a sub at Kilmarnock, and see, for an hour, Celtic were plodding, they weren't even attacking. Kilmarnock were looking as if they were going to. They were leading 1-0, it could have been 2-0.
That's right.
I remember just thinking, and it was an awful day. It was drizzly rain and dank. And Decanio comes on, and he just. You know, some guys jog onto the park, keep him on like a whirlwind.
Aye.
And he started pointing to people and shouting and all this. And it's the first time we'd seen him.
Aye.
And we're thinking, what's this? And then as soon as he gets the ball, he beats two men, lays off, and you're thinking, oh, what have we got here?
Well, we had a wee idea of that, because he'd been injured, you see, and so that's why he was on the bench. And we were actually thinking, if we could get away with no playing him that day, it would have been better, just to make sure the injury clears up. But he'd scored 10 goals in one of the pre-season games in Holland or Germany, wherever we were. And training, I've never seen anything like it. The ability, the confidence, the hunger, desire. I mean, he had it all. He was a genius.
And yet he was hard working, though.
Oh, well, they say that about geniuses. They're close to madness, and Paolo was like that. But I mean, what a player. I just feel so sad that he wasn't a Celtic player for at least 3 or 4 years. You remember. Some of the stuff was unbelievable. But as you say, that day at Kilmarnock was like. It was like something for another planet that came on.
The game that when we got knocked out the Scottish Cup in the semi-final with Falkirk in the replay, that was an infuriating game. And my recollection is that the player just were getting. Did you ever play at school with a guy who was so good?
Aye.
And everybody just thinks, I'm not going to do anything, but I'm just going to heat him, because he'll beat three men and he'll score a goal.
Aye.
And they go to the stage, and Falkirk clicked it and put 3 or 4 men on him. And he couldn't beat it, and it was dead frustrating that night, because
you're absolutely right. I mean, you're bang on, because the season before Paolo came, we had a real formula in terms of the shape of the team, and Paolo upset that.
Great player that he was
too good to leave. Oh no, you never leave him out, But because we brought him to play wide right, and he wasn't coming to Scotland to play wide right. He was coming to get on the ball. I mean, he just demanded it. He wanted the ball at the time, as you say, that Falkirk game. You know, if that had been if Paolo hadn't been playing probably the season before, we'd have beat him, because we had a form. Yeah, but as you say, he was such a powerful character that if people were forced to give him the ball, even with 3 or 4 players on the ball, and he tried like a beer to win us a game. You could never level that against them. It just upset the balance a wee bit.
Do you think if you and Tommy had stayed, he'd have stayed? Because I don't know if he used that to work his ticket. Because when Tommy left, he made a big thing about the press. But this is a man that I came here for him, not for Fergus McCann.
No, I think that's the truth, without a doubt. I mean, just to go back to that. Excuse me. To go back to the type of character he was in terms of giving him the ball. One day we were training at Barrafield and Big Gordon Marshall just played a game, eight aside, whatever it was, and Marston didn't give him the ball. And he threw a strop, went up, arguing with Marston, and he stormed off Barrafield, walked up London Road to Celtic Park. Tommy had to go up to his house that night with flowers for the wife, chocolates, the whole bit. Mm-hmm. And then he was back on board again. So he was that type of character, and he loved Tommy. Mm-hmm. He just, so I think you're right. I'm not saying he was going to have 10 years in Celtic, but I think he would certainly have stayed for another year, without a doubt. Mm-hmm.
So, talking about Di Canio, you can't talk about Cadetti as well now.
Yeah.
Again, looking back, in hindsight, it's an easy thing, but no getting Cadet at the time when we could have got him, as I said, it was a fine margin that season between Celtic Rangers. It was only something like, if we'd have won one old firm game rather than a draw, then we'd have won the league.
That's right.
And we only lost one game the whole season. If it's going to be critical, you can see there was too many drawn games maybe didn't get it. Those drawn games could easily have been turned into ones if Cadetti was playing.
Absolutely. I mean, I think I looked at that no long after that, and actually when you looked at the leagues in Europe, 9, 10, 11 draws, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. A lot of the league champions had that. Mm-hmm. It was just that the Rangers had Gascoigne and Loudrop, and they won more games. Mm-hmm. So I know what you're saying, but normally that wouldn't have been too many draws. But it's just the fact that the Rangers, they won games late as well. But I really make a point there. He scored the goal at Ibrox, remember? He was given offside.
Which was our offside.
Right yard. So. And of course, he missed the semi-final because Jim Farrey famously delayed the registration, which obviously was sorted. Mm-hmm. He lost his job because of that. So there'll be things that you can sit back when you're reflecting on things and think, well, that could just have made it.
Well, if it annoys me after all these years as a fan, then I don't think there's any doubt that would get under you and Tommy's skin as well in later years.
Absolutely.
So. Then Tommy moved on and you became the caretaker manager.
Yep.
For three games.
Yeah.
Unbeaten.
Yeah.
So how did you find that as an experience? It was obviously different being the main man rather than being the assistant.
Aye, but it was you're talking, it was Hibs Easter Road on the Sunday. I think Tommy had left just at the end of that week, so the first thing I did was speak to Tommy, and Tommy said, look, you go to, because they sort of encouraged me, I suppose encourage is the right way to stay on and have a go at being the full time manager, but once Tommy was gone, I was gone. Mm-hmm. And I told Tommy that, he says, well, you should take them to the end of the season
just to see it through.
Mm-hmm. and that's what I did. And after the last game, Dundee United at Celtic Park, that was me.
The last season was a wee bit annoying because there was we'd beat Rangers in the cup in early March, and then we played them late March in the league. And I think when Rangers won that one, it became obvious that we weren't going to do it.
I did the shittiest goal you've ever seen.
Do you remember that?
Oh. Mm. And it was the windiest day ever.
And do you remember, it was at Paolo's Mac Tabar with a free kick?
I did.
We were about 25 yards.
There was papers blowing all over the stadium and all this. It turned out to be a horrible day. I remember it well because did somebody bundle it in at the back post for their goal? Don't know who it was, but having beaten them quite comfortably in the cup, a couple of weeks before,
and they proved they could beat them.
They brought back Haley for that game, and it was a sort of stunt that ended up working for them. So that's just the way it goes. It just wasn't meant to be, but that, as you say, that season was frustrating because it wasn't as consistent as the season before. But there was opportunities at different times to just take that step to get in front of them, and we didn't quite manage it.
So, you and Tommy went your separate ways at that point. Morton first, then St John's, and you went about the a few clubs.
Well, you see, the difficulty is for us and for Tommy, especially, is having been Celtic manager. There's no
really next.
There's no anything in Scotland.
I know.
Really.
No.
And my it's just wee things in life. I'm married to a teacher, and I've got two girls, and their education was quite important. So I said to Tommy, once we had both left Celtic that summer, because I knew he might be looking down south, I said, look, I'm not going to go, come down south with you. And of course, he respected that.
His heart was never in it, was it?
I don't think so. No, I don't think so. I mean, Tam was... I'm sure Celtic supporters will just imagine how distraught he was about losing his job, you know, and the circumstances that he lost it. Because if you remember, Lee Fergus offered him youth team coach or something. I don't know if that was a manoeuvre. It never going to happen, was it? So, but Tam never, just the type of guy he was, if he had any real bitterness, he didn't show it.
No.
You know, I saw him in the days right after that, and it was... It was really tough. But he moved on. Celtic was his club. Always was, always will be. And he would never be disrespectful to the club.
So, of course, Tommy went back under Kenny originally.
And then
the good thing is when Martin O'Neill came and Gordon Strachan came, he got elevated a few times and get back into the scheme of things. But when Tommy's illness came, did he confide in you? Were you aware of what was going on?
Because I was at Queen's Park at the time, and he was in the Royal for a couple of weeks, and I used to go up every lunchtime, and then it looked as if it was getting sorted, because I remember I remember speaking to him on the phone, and the day that his granddaughter was born, it was the same day he got the news that it was back again. So it's heartbreaking, you know what I mean? I find it difficult to talk about it.
It's a bit weird because at the beginning of the 07-08 season, Celtic beat Spartak Moscow in penalties, and there's wonderful footage that the players go mad at it. It was a shoot.
Was that Tam running?
Aye, and Tam, he's the last one that jumps on. Everybody's in a big pile-up. And you're thinking, you know, at that point he seemed that hale and hearty. And yet within that would have been maybe like September, and then he'd passed away by, was it April?
It was May.
May
16th, I think it was.
And you're thinking, well, that's not a long time. No. And the reason why I'm bringing that up is that one of the saddest things I've ever heard, I'm not ashamed to say that, I think, you know, as Glaswegians and men, but you're not supposed to admit it, I had a good great tip was your eulogy in the TV. You know, that was something. So it was.
I
must have been very difficult.
I don't know how I did that. I mean, I couldn't speak at my mother and father's funerals. But you know, I had a wee sort of. I mean, Tam had many great pals, close pals. So for Rosemary asked me to do it, there was no way in the world I could say no. And I still to this day, I don't know how I did that, to be honest. I've never seen it. I know it's on YouTube and all the rest of it, but I couldn't.
Well, obviously, for the likes of ourselves that are coming in for our work and seeing, because I was, I would never say I was at the funeral, but I stood outside Celtic Park. And when the Cortes come along and to pay their respects, it was thousands of days there. And you just had to see the floral tributes, the scarves, the jerseys that were outside the front door to get an indication
for the
respect he was held in. But even when he's coffin was getting carried out, there was George McCluskey, for example, for his earliest days, and then there was Ali and Walter Smith. Because Tommy sort of bridged the divide a wee bit, but I think, you know, decent people respected Tommy, and then there was yourself, and you know, there was such a broad, diverse,
covered everything. Career, I know. I've never watched it, and I've got all his DVDs and all the rest of it, and I've never. One day I will, but I just can't. I mean, that sounds ridiculous because it's. I think, was it 2008?
It seems so long ago now, doesn't it? But, it seems a lot longer.
But as I say, I appreciate people saying that you did a reasonable job, but I couldn't even tell you what I said. I don't know. I remember.
The last thing you said was thanks, pal.
I know.
Remember that. I know you said other things, but I always remember the thanks, pal.
I'll
miss you, pal. Is that what it was? I'll miss you, pal.
Which I still do. I mean, I take Rosemary out for lunch.
That's
or
nice.
A coffee or whatever, and but she's still, I don't think she's ever recovered, no, to be honest.
Because he was a young man.
That's the impact that he had on life. he was ebullient, full of fun, just what a personality, you know. Because, you know, a lot of the guys like that at times have got another sort of side to them that's but Tam didn't he respected everybody, and he seemed like when he did anything wrong in terms of disciplinary thing or whatever, he was so remorseful after it, and would apologise or whatever it took, which tells you the measure of a man, you know.
David Proven made a good point at the time, and he says there's three things in Tommy's life: faith, family, football.
That's
in that order.
Right.
And he says, by the way, football came a poor third.
Right,
so although we remember Tommy the footballer,
and
Tommy the Celtic man,
was football.
There was other things in his life that came in front of that, and I think that's only right that we highlight that. So you moved on in managerial terms, and most recently you were in the high profile for the Scotland under 21 job. What was the difference between being the international manager and being the club manager? Did you enjoy it?
I enjoyed it. It was frustrating in a lot of ways, but every football job's got its frustrations, whether it's a club and you're not getting money to buy players or whatever it is. So there's no perfect job. But I had 7 years at it and really enjoyed it. I was able to travel all over Europe, play against international teams, obviously. You know, work with the best young players that we have.
Do you think that young boys now are as determined and committed as what they were in your day when you were coming
through? Well, I think there are some. I think that it's a generational thing and the way the world's evolved in terms of.
Because nobody cleans the boots now, the chores of the apprentice.
No. But it's quite the politically correct and all the rest of it. We all played football, even guys that didn't like football, they had to play because all the pals were playing.
There's nothing else to do.
So, you know, I think it's no rocket science. That's why we don't produce anywhere near the same level of player. You know, maybe that's wrong to say level of player, but the number of good players that we used to produce, and that's a fact, you know, that can't be contested. But I think, to be honest with you, the Scotland job was a great experience, and again I get the opportunity to take the full national team for a game when Craig Levein was sacked, and that was a great opportunity. So
what game was that?
We played Luxembourg away. Craig Levein gets sacked, and
what was the score?
Then we won 2-1.
Good.
Which Jordan Rhodes scored a couple of goals. Big Charlie played. Chris Commons came, but was injured. I'm just trying to think of the other Celtic players that we had.
So, under 21s, is there any under 21 player that you thought was a standout and that we should look out for?
There's been a few. I mean, I think my first group, Stephen Fletcher, was a real top player.
He's proved it.
Sure, Armstrong. To go to jump for that first group to my last group, Armstrong, I had as a young one.
We play him wide in the left. What would you say is his best position? I would like to see him in the centre.
He is better in the centre. But so I think he may get it. He's such a cracking boy. You would love him if you knew him. And that's not always the case with any walk of life, but in football.
I
mean that in terms of attitude.
Yeah.
You want to do well, responding to what the manager's asking for, and I think he's going to become a real top player, because he's not that type he's confident enough in himself, but he's not overly confident. You know, some people carry that off.
You know, but when he signed for Celtic, he got interviewed in the TV, and I remember listening to his interviews and thinking, you're not the archetype footballer, son. Different. There's just something about him. It's obviously he was taking it seriously, but not that seriously.
Yeah.
You know,
No. I mean, he's football all the way, and you know that's what I'm saying.
He's a clever boy.
He's a clever boy. Well, he's doing an Open University degree. So he was my captain on the 21s. I had him for a number of years. Had him as a young one. So his potential was always there for me, and I was delighted to see him signing for Celtic. Obviously.
So last thing, just to finish off by saying, you're with Albion Rovers now under the boy who's Aberdeen.
Darren Young.
Yep. And just to wish you, and every Celtic fan goes without saying, big Celtic supporting Coat Bridge, obviously. To wish you the very very best for the new season with Albion Rovers in your new role.
That's great, appreciate that.
And to thank you for your efforts through the years. It was great watching you in the hoops, and the centenary season will always be a special memory.
It was my pleasure, Steve, that's for sure.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Bring me sunshine in your smile. Great ingestion chat once again with St Anthony and Billy Stark. I'm away to bed with my hot toddy. There'll be more podcasts along soon. We're getting into the meat and bones of the season. So all that's left is for me to say that was him, St Anthony, with him, Billy Stark. And this is me saying God bless and good night. Good night. Never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love. Bring me sunshine in your smile. Bring me laughter all the while. This world where we live, there should be more happiness. So much joy you can give to each brand new bright tomorrow. Make me happy through the years. Never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love, sweet love. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love.